Gives good counsel. Ma
Anshami.
Avignam foolish. Vyushite. At the time of my being away. Shoka. By aggrievement. Karshita. Being aggrieved and thus dried up. Vartma. Path. Etat. This. Grihamedeham. Of household responsibilities. Virasuhu. The mother of great heroes. Api. Although. Neshati. Will she be able to execute? So, translation. King Bharanjana continued thinking how, when he was in a state of bewilderment, his wife would give him good counsel, and how she would become aggrieved when he was away from home. Although she was the mother of so many sons and heroes, the king still feared that she would not be able to maintain the responsibility of household affairs. You can repeat. King Bharanjana continued thinking how, when he was in a state of bewilderment,
his wife would give him good counsel,
and how she would become aggrieved
when he was away from home.
Although she was the mother of so many sons and heroes,
the king still feared
that she would not be able to maintain
the responsibility of household affairs.
So, purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. At the time of death, King Bharanjana was thinking of his wife, and that this is called polluted consciousness. As Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, text 7, Mamaivangso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatanaha manakshastani indriyani prakatistani karshati. The living entities in this conditioned world, are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. The living entity is, after all, part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit, Krishna. In other words, Krishna's constitutional position and the living entity's constitutional position are the same qualitatively. The only difference is that the living entity is eternally an atomic particle of the Supreme Spirit. Mamevangcho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatanaha. In this material world of conditional life, the fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord, the individual soul, is struggling due to his contaminated mind and consciousness. As part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, a living entity is supposed to think of Krishna. But here we see that King Bharanjana, the living entity, is thinking of a woman. Such mental absorption in some sense object brings about the living entity's struggle for existence in this material world. Since King Bharanjana is thinking of his wife, his struggle for existence in the material world will not be ended by death. As revealed in the following verses, King Bharanjana had to accept the body of a woman in his next life due to his being overly absorbed in thoughts of his wife. Thus, mental absorption in social, political, pseudo-religious, national, and communal consciousness is cause for bondage. During one's lifetime, one has to change his activities in order to attain release from bondage. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. In the third chapter, text 9. Yatyartha kamaho nyatra lokayam karma bandhanaha. If we do not change our consciousness in this life, whatever we do in the name of social, political, religious, or communal, or national welfare will be the cause of our bondage. This means we will have to continue in material conditioned life. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, text 7, Mana Shastani Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati. When the mind and senses are engaged in material activities, one has to continue his material existence and struggle to attain happiness. In each and every life, one is engaged in the struggle to become happy. Actually, no one in this material world is happy. But the struggle gives a false sense of happiness. A person must work very hard, and when he attains the result of his hard work, he thinks himself happy. In the material world, people do not know what real happiness is. Sukham atyantikam yadtad bhuti grayam atindriyam. It's from the Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, text 21. Real happiness must be appreciated by one's transcendental senses. Unless one is purified, the transcendental senses are not manifest. Therefore, to purify the senses, one must take to Krishna consciousness to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. Then there will be real happiness and liberation. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, text 8, Shariram yadavapnoti yachyapyukramatishvadaha grahitvaitani samyati vayurgandhan ivashayat. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. If the wind passes over a garden of roses, it will carry the aroma of roses. And if it passes over a filthy place, it will carry the stench of obnoxious things. Similarly, King Paranjan, the living entity, now passes the air of his life over his wife, a woman. Therefore, he has to accept the body of a woman in his next life. Prabodhyati mahignam vyushate shokakarshita vartmaitad grihamediyam virasurapi neshati. So omagana timbadandasha gananjana shilakaya chakshur and meditam yena tasmai shigurave namaha. So, according to this verse, there's two reasons why, that's more than this, but at least in this verse in purport, why King Paranjana is attached to his wife. One reason, he's mentioned previously, that she pleased his senses. And what pleases a man's senses more than anything else is to have someone to be an abject, obedient servant. As we mentioned before, that's the way you butter someone up. You ladies, you can butter someone up. You know, butter. Anyway, you butter someone up by doing different things for them, you know, and then the person will be willing to do anything. Anyway, so by pleasing, so the wife pleases the senses by cooking, by cleaning, by speaking sweetly, having a smile on her face, and when the husband comes home, never speaking a harsh word. I know it doesn't happen nowadays, but anyway, but that's the way, the tradition. Yeah, can you imagine that? You know, you come home every day and someone just says, oh, I'm so happy you're home. I've been waiting for you all day long. And so this is what's mentioned here. She would become aggrieved when he was away from home. You know, it's a, so you're away from home and she's crying, when will he come home? Just like the gopis, when Krishna went to the pasturing ground, not just the gopis, I mean, Mother Yashoda and all the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna went to the pasturing ground with his cowherd boyfriends, they would just stand there, staring. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it mentions that when Gopa Kumar went to the spiritual realm of Loka Vrindavan, that nobody would talk to him because they were all just standing there, just waiting for Krishna to come back. You know, he went there and he says, you know, where is Krishna? And just like, they didn't hear him. Hello, you there? Hare Krishna. And obviously, they were just, one old person that finally regained enough composure to tell Gopal Kumar that Krishna was just coming back. And they were just waiting, looking. When is he coming? When is he coming? Like that. So, that's very pleasing for someone, isn't it? Someone really adores you. Puts you on a pedestal. Even, of course, the women like that too, you know. The women want to be put on a pedestal and adored like that. And then, and so they preach it very much. The man has a little locket, or the woman has a locket with a picture of them in it. Isn't it a little heart, the locket? And that's what, that's one reason why they like, why the ladies like jewelry presents. Because it's not that jewelry per se is wonderful, but it's a symptom. What do they say? Diamonds are forever. You know, it's a symptom of someone's like worshiping you. It's like you get jewelry for the deities, or you get jewelry for your wife. You have a choice. So it's extremely pleasing being worshipped and adored. You're everything to me. I can't live without you. I've been waiting all day long for you. Can you imagine that? Has anyone had that experience? No. Anyway, so... Your dog? Well, that's why people love their dogs, too. Because the dog... There's this word called obsequious, which is a fancy word in English. Obsequious means always trying to please. Like, to the extent it's dog-like. That's what obsequious... The direct meaning is always trying to please, but it's understood, like the indirect meaning, implicit meaning is it's like dog-like. If you say he's obsequious, it's actually an insult. If you say so-and-so is obsequious, because that means it's not. So if you want to have a successful household life, you ladies, of course, anyone here married? No. So those who are on the internet listening, then you have to just wait for your husband like this. And he comes home. Oh, I'm so happy you're home. And never a harsh word, and you're just everything nice. The house, spick and span. That's an interesting word, spick and span. So that's very pleasing. So one gets very attached if someone serves them like that. And, you know, you can't, and you figure you can't live without them. You become overly dependent also on service. That's another point. Whether it's a husband-wife relationship or, you know, a sannyasi with his servant or whatever, you become overly dependent, so you can't really function. I've seen even people brought up in a very rich family who are overly dependent upon servants in their house. You know, they can't figure out how to do anything. I mean, just like, even when I was young, I became overly dependent on my mother. That, you know, I just thought it would throw my clothes around. You'd figure the clothes somehow or other, they get picked up by themselves, you know, they... You understand? So I never really learned how to pick up my own clothes. So even today, I need someone to pick up the clothes. Anyway, so you become overly dependent. And that means attachment. I can't live without you. You've heard that expression. I can't live without you. Obviously, you can, because Krishna is taking care of you. I mean, just like it's really funny. I talked to some men, and they say I don't even know how to cook anything, because my wife has always been cooking for me, taking care of me. And it's even funny, even as a sannyasi, like. Well, I remember when we were first here that, you know, I didn't have anyone do laundry. So I would go to the laundromat, and the devotee would say, "You actually know how to do laundry?" You know, they were shocked that I knew how to put clothes into a washing machine. And add the soap. You know, they were thinking I would add so much soap, the thing would come bubbling. You know, like you have some cartoon, some fool puts like 20 cups of soap in the washing machine, and the whole house is filled with bubbles. You understand what I mean? So people were shocked. You know, you actually know how to do that. And then I used to iron my clothes. You know how to iron your clothes? You know how to sew? Huh? How's that possible? So it's actually funny, because people become overly dependent on another, and they can't figure out, you know, that, like, well, I mean, I don't know if I should mention them. Anyway, I mean, it's just like even my mother and her husband, that, you know, she has to take care of him. He wouldn't be able to eat without her. He wouldn't be able to do this. He wouldn't be able to do that, because he's been so accustomed, so many years of being taken care of, that you lose, at least like mentally, your ability to take care of yourself. It's a fact. Like too much dependence, of course the statement is too much dependence on another's mercy weakens one. And it really does. It really weakens one. I mean, so you have sannyasis who can't figure out how to carry their own bags. Or wash clothes, or, you know, whatever other things sannyasis become incapable of doing. Or even typing on a computer, if they have a secretary to type on a computer for them. Like that. So it's actually, you learn to become incompetent in that way. I find that when I travel in foreign countries, you know, we use a translator all the time. So therefore you become dependent. You never learn the language when you have a translator. If you didn't have it, when I was in Venezuela, I didn't have a translator, or the translators weren't good, or they weren't always around. So I learned Spanish. But now when I go to Fiji or India, I always have someone to translate. So I'm not, you know, where's the impetus to learn? So I'm just becoming dependent on others. I need it. Without you, you know, I can't go shopping. I can't do anything. You know, I'm hopeless. Hopeless and helpless. So King Paranjana, that's one reason. He became so dependent upon his wife for fulfilling his needs that there was no question of him being separated from his wife. So he was thinking of his wife for that reason. Another reason he was thinking, which is quite an interesting reason, is that he was thinking himself the doer in terms of his wife's welfare. In other words, without him, just like he was thinking, without her, how would I survive? He was thinking, without me, how would she survive? Which is quite interesting. And so this is mentioned by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. In the third chapter, text 27, Krishna says, Prakriti kriyamane gunai karmani sarvashaha ankara vimuratma kartamham iti manyate. Never heard that verse before? Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. That in this material world we have this prakriti. Prakriti means the material energy in this particular context. And the activities are actually carried, kriyamanani, they're actually carried out by prakriti. You know, kriya. They're actually carried out by prakriti, kriyamane, gunai karmani sarvasha. And everything is under the modes, sarvasha, that means everything, gunai, everything is under the modes of material nature. But we are so stupid, we are thinking ahankara, that I am the control, vimudatma, we are bewildered, are basically stupid. Mudha means, sometimes mudha is translated like an ass, but it basically means bewildered. So vimuda means very bewildered. You have your Bhagavad Gita there?
Yeah.
Oh, you're checking that verse out, making sure I got the right verse. But that Gita doesn't have the Sanskrit, does it? Oh, it does. Vimudatma, kartaham iti manyate. So he thinks himself kartaham. He thinks himself the doer. He's thinking that I am the doer of these activities, whereas in reality it's carried out by material nature. So in other words, his wife's maintenance and everything else was basically due to her good karma. Her karma and material nature, or Krishna if she happens to be a devotee. But he's thinking, it's due to me, things are going on. I mean, we think like that a lot too. Like, I'm thinking like, it's due to me, this temple is going on. It's due to me that, whatever, you know, people are chanting Hare Krishna. But, you know, we think we're the doer in all these activities, but it's actually Krishna. However, that doesn't mean we should renounce our activities. Because even though things are going on, like the temple would go on, I mean, temple would go on without me if I kicked the bucket or whatever, then still I have my duty to Krishna. And this is one of the main messages of Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna is shown the universal form. And in that universal form, you see all the soldiers rushing into the mouths of the universal form. And it's obvious that the Pandavas are going to be successful. What's up? Oh, you can hear. That's good. So it's obvious the Pandavas are going to be successful, and Krishna just basically says, you know, be instrumental. Be instrumental. It's going to happen anyway. You know, it's going to happen anyway, so be instrumental. That's Krishna's direction. Be instrumental in carrying that out. But you're not the doer. You're not entitled to the fruits of action, and you're not the cause of the fruits, or you're not the cause of the action. But you can take credit. So devotional service is something like that. I mean, basically, we're doing our service for, you know, our own benefit. Of course, the benefit pleases the spiritual master and everything like that. But if we weren't here, I mean, it's not that the Krishna conscious movement would stop. Of course, when you have a great devotee like His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, it was Srila Prabhupada's mercy that created our good fortune. So that's another point, you know, that you can balance it like that. So we're supposed to create others' good fortune. So we do have some responsibility spiritually in preaching and creating other people's good fortune. It's not that we should think that, you know, if I just stop preaching, just sit in my room and watch Bollywood movies all day long. We've actually had devotees here who watch Bollywood movies all day long, except when they were on the altar. But I guess they just considered Krishna to be a Bollywood star. You know, tall, dark, and handsome. So we shouldn't think like that everything will go on as far as the preaching movement, because as far as preaching and reaching out to people, we can add something. You understand? We can add something. Because it's interesting. It's just interesting that the devotee is more merciful than Krishna. Everything else, you know, Krishna takes care of, like the karma, maintaining everybody, making sure you're getting enough food, nitya nityanam, chaitanya chaitanam, eko bohunam, yobadadati kamam, making sure it's warm enough here in the temple. Everything else is taken care of by Krishna. And, I mean, utilizing different devotees or people as his agents, or the material energy as his agent, or the modes of nature as his agent, whatever. But as far as preaching Krishna consciousness, the devotee can actually go beyond what Krishna, even what Krishna had planned out. And that's creating someone's good fortune. So in that case, yes, we can actually, it's not that we're actually the doer, but we're actually creating something that wouldn't be created had we not been here. You understand? Which is interesting. In that case, yes, like Prabhupada created our good fortune. If Prabhupada had not come to the Western world, had the mercy to come to the Western world, Krishna would have just said, let those people rot, or maybe. But in every other case, so King Paranjani here is not concerned with the Krishna consciousness of his wife, obviously. He's concerned, as mentioned in the last line here, she would not be able to maintain the responsibility of household affairs. Well, he's wrong. Household affairs will go on or not go on according to her karma and Krishna's will. So that's illusion. So therefore we shouldn't be an illusion thinking we are the doer, but we have to do our service at the same time, like Arjuna had to do his service. And we should engage as much as possible in preaching and reaching out to people to create their good fortune. That's one point here. Now, the final point is that we have to somehow or other engage our senses, according to the way Srila Prabhupada is talking here, in remembering Krishna, and being absorbed in Krishna, rather than passing our consciousness over a filthy place. Prabhupada said, this is a very interesting verse. I mean, it really struck me when I read it. If our consciousness passes, or if the wind passes over a filthy place, it will carry the stench of obnoxious things. And that's such a heavy statement. So we're passing our consciousness over this, you know, filthy place, or attachment to the body, or attachment thinking that we're the doer, attachment to enjoying other people's bodies. Can you imagine how exploitative that is? You know, a boy looks at a girl looks at a boy, and says, says, I love you, but it means I just want to exploit you. I just want to use your body for my own enjoyment. Just like people are killing animals and they're using the body to eat. So that's one type of using someone's body to enjoy. And also the sexual interaction is another type of using someone's body to enjoy. You know, that's life. So that's a stench of obnoxious things. Yuck. I mean, two words here are just very heavy. Stench. When you say, what is that stench? Even your nose starts to curl up when you say that word, isn't it? It's, ooh, where's that stench coming from? A neutral word would be smell. Where's that good smell coming from? Where's that bad smell coming from? But you couldn't say, where's that good stench coming from? Right? Those are no English. No, you can't say that. Because it's just a contradiction in words. So it's a stench. And then the second word is obnoxious things. It's like when you go into someone's house and they're cooking garlic, something with garlic. Isn't it garlic? You. Or you even go near someone who has been eating garlic. You just want to go, ugh. It's like I remember one time one devotee had to take garlic for her health. She was going on Sankirtan. And in the van with all the devotees, and they had to stick their heads out of the van on the way to Sankirtan because they couldn't breathe inside the van. Yeah, right. It was in Miami. They were all on the way to the airport. So that's like stench of obnoxious things. Just to give you a little picture of what a stench is. So instead, we should pass our consciousness over Krishna's, you know, the attractive features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, heard from the lips of a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada. So when we do that, then the mind automatically becomes attracted. Just like Lord Kapila Dev describes, just like the streams, they're all rushing down to the ocean. You know, the mountain streams are rushing down to the ocean. The same way a devotee's mind becomes attracted, or like a magnet that attracts the iron fillings, the devotee's mind automatically becomes attracted to Krishna like that. And it's so nice. I mean, just like yesterday, I listen a lot when I'm to Krishna's pastimes. I mean, I spend a lot of time, even when I'm riding my bicycle, as I mentioned before. So yesterday I was listening to Lord Ram's pastimes from the Ramayana. It's nice. You get in different moods. When you're listening to Krishna's pastimes, it's very Madhurya. I mean, sweet. And then when you listen to Lord Ram's pastimes, you get into this, like, pugilistic type of mentality. You know pugilistic? And you have a word like that in Spanish?
Puri.
Puri. All right. So which means, like, fighting. So, yeah. So yesterday I was listening to the monkeys, like biting the rakshasas. It's nice. Monkeys biting the rakshasas and the rakshasas hitting back. And it was so nice hearing about even Ravana. Ravana was just so filled with false ego that he refused, even though he was seeing all of his soldiers dying and everything like that, he refused to give back Sita Devi. So anyway, hearing about these things, it very much attracts the mind. So I'm riding my bike, hearing about Lord Ram's pastimes, or, you know, taking care of my deities, hearing about Lord. You know, I just look forward to it. You know, I'm thinking, you know, after class, after the morning program, then I do my puja, I get to listen to more pastimes of the Supreme Personality. God, wow. I just, my whole day, I'm looking forward. Some things I don't look forward to, some email letters I don't. But it's like that. You know, you're looking forward. You know, when am I going to get a chance to hear more? When am I going to get a chance to hear more? And so in this way, the mind will always be passing over, like the wind passing over some nice smelly things like roses. And you'll be attracted to Krishna, and you'll think of Krishna at the time of death. Because when you leave your body, you're going to be thinking, when can I hear more about Lord Rama, Lord Krishna? You know, you're looking forward to leaving your body even. Because now I'm going to get a chance to see Krishna. in next life. So that, it has to be that anticipation too. Like leaving your body is not just, you know, oh, I got to think of Krishna at the time of death or else everything's going to be finished. just like, oh, got to think of Krishna. Okay, put some tapes on, let me think of Krishna. It has to be some anticipation. Oh, wow, I'm going to get a chance to serve Krishna more in the next life. I'm getting a chance to see Krishna. It's nice, isn't it? So you look forward to it. So a devotee actually looks forward to it. Not that he commits suicide, but he looks forward to that. Just like you look forward to hearing about Krishna, look forward to Bhagavatam, look forward to Mangalarti, if you have the right consciousness. So any questions or comments? And anyway, in this way, you'll think of Krishna at the time of death. Then it's very easy. It's very easy to be Krishna conscious, especially with modern technology. So, any questions or comments? Yeah.
So this concept of not being a doer?
Yeah.
In chapter 13, section 21
of the Gita,
Krishna says that material nature is the cause of everything.
Yeah.
But the cause of suffering and enjoyment is the individual. And in chapter 18, the list of five basic elements.
Factors of action, yeah.
It includes doer. So it's kind of difficult to balance chapter 3's information and...
Well, doer not in the sense that he's ultimately responsible, but doer is just an analysis of things that happen in this world. Because one doer could be substituted for another doer. You understand? If you don't do it, someone else will do it. It's just an analysis of, these are the five factors of action, you know, the place, the doer, the endeavor, ultimately the super soul. So the action is going to happen anyway, but the doer in that particular context means just the person who is the intermediate cause, not the ultimate cause of the action.
Because of choice?
He's deciding to be part of that action that would happen anyway.
And I was thinking that the qualification for the devotee to go past Krishna's mercy is that he has his independence and he exercises it on Krishna's behalf.
Yeah.
Thinking this will be Krishna, but Krishna's quite self-satisfied.
So he's self-satisfied, but he wants the devotee's love.
It, and it only happens through the devotee's extension of exercising.
Yeah, the devotee exercises free will. But if there's something that's supposed to happen, it will happen without you or me, except someone else will do it. That was the point. If Krishna wants something to happen, like Krishna wanted to destroy Prithranaya Sadananda Nishaya Chidushkrutam, to destroy all the miscreants and establish religious principles and protect the devotees according to the Bhagavad Gita. And it was going to happen anyway. Whether Arjuna was instrumental or he wasn't, it still was going to happen. You understand what I mean?
I'm thinking that people, devotees particularly, push it to accomplish something, and they come up with a colossal loss or a miscalculation, and then they give credit to Krishna. Oh, Krishna's mercy.
Well, that's their foolishness.
Yeah, I think so.
It's Krishna's mercy. You blame Krishna, and if something goes right, you take the credit for it. It was my devotion that did it.
Yeah, even the materialists, when there's a big weather pattern, that's the only time they credit God. It's a big act of destruction.
An act of God. Yeah, they call it an act of God.
That's a good fortune with God and not involved.
Yeah, that's true. When the stock market goes up, then it's my good fortune. But in any case, we should see, like in the course of ordinary material things, that things will go on with or without us. However, we can extend ourselves and help people become Krishna conscious. In this way, in spiritual sense, we can be the doer. Not in the same material sense, but we can be the doer. We can actually bring someone to Krishna's lotus feet, when ordinarily Krishna had not planned to bring them to his lotus feet. That's an interesting point. So...